Hey guys, welcome back to Unpopular. How is everybody doing? I've had a lot of messages about people that are watching The Traitors UK. It's unanimous. Everyone is like, it's a masterpiece. Everybody that watches it says it's like the best reality season they've seen. I knew that I wasn't delusional. I knew that I was right, but you are never quite sure if like everyone is going to agree. Like, is everyone going to see what I'm seeing, even though I am right, but will they know? And the general consensus is it's brilliant. So that's been nice. We're not talking about TV today, though. I'm talking about a few other things that I've seen in the media. Some articles I've read, some things that have been on my mind for a while. I think you guys will like it. We'll get back to some TV stuff next week. The new season of Vanderpump Rules is on fire. I'm doing a bit of that on Patreon. What else am I enjoying? I don't know. I'm getting ready for a wedding this weekend, a family wedding. I'm excited to support them at their wedding, of course, because I really like them. Everything else about it, I'm not looking forward to the travel, the town that I'm staying in. It's an isolated, like, bush wedding that you have to get to via a scheduled bus, and then you can only get back via the bus too. So I'm going to be stuck there the whole time. Like, I can't just like see the service, see them do, you know, I do say hello and get out of there. I'm in there for the whole duration of it. And I just do not do well with like being forced into an area that I cannot leave. I find it like very claustrophobic and suffocating. And I'm just like, I feel like I don't have control over my own life because I can't just leave when I want to. Like, what am I going to do? Run off into the fucking bush? So I'm excited to support them and to see them, you know, affirm their love, but everything else, not so great, you know, leaving Chunky here, being away from Chunky, you know, so, oh, and in other news, I think I've scrapped New York off of my US trip. Jess from Hot Takes and Deep Dives was telling me that it's like 5 hours from LA to New York. I'm like, I can't, like, I'm not good with travel. I'm not good with organization. It just feels like too much. Like, I can't. It's just too much. Like, there's people that I really want to see in New York. Like, there's a lot of people I want to see in New York, but it's just like, no. 5 fucking hours there and back. I don't think so. So I think I'm going to stay on the LA side of America, and I've still got to work out the Montana dates, actually, if I can get to Montana. Oops, see what a mess I am. Like, I can't organize anything. It's crazy. And maybe I'll like try to go to like Salt Lake City. That's near there, right? Can you imagine me in Salt Lake City? Have fun. I don't know. I'm going to stay on that side of the country, and then I will do another US trip, and the next US trip will be the New York side. And I really want to go to Hawaii. I think the next trip will be Hawaii and New York. Yeah. Fly from Australia to, which one I go to first? I don't know. Next trip's Hawaii, New York, okay? Pretty sure. This one will be LA side. My LA vibes, my Mulholland Drive experience. Okay, I don't want to go too deep on this next topic, although maybe I do, we'll see. Anytime I say I'm not going deep, then I ramble and it's like as deep as possible. And then when I want to do a deep dive on something, it's like I have nothing to say and it's like one sentence and then like crickets chirping. But there's a great article that dropped a few weeks ago. It's all about what they're doing to kids with the hormones and the puberty blockers and the transgender surgeries. Obviously, this stuff has been, it's been a big talking point for a long time. It's really amped up recently post Libs of TikTok because we're getting a lot of insanity on both sides on this. And the story came from a whistleblower who was working in a pediatric clinic. It was part of the St. Louis Children's Hospital. And the story was published in the Free Press. That is Barry Weiss's news outlet. A lot of you probably know who she is because, I mean, she's a pretty big name. But if you don't, she used to work at the New York Times. She was a journalist there who, she was kind of like pushed out of the paper, I guess, because her very innocuous centrist views were considered too radical by the New York Times staff. She was also very savvy in building her media profile off the back of her platform at the time. Her whole brand is, I am the sensible, highly educated centrist in the room. Please listen to my rational explanation and logic regarding everything. She's like annoying, but she does do a lot of good work on stuff too. She also does things I can't stand. It's a mixed bag, but whatever. That's like literally everybody in political media. And she started her own like press brand now called The Free Press, and they do a lot of trans coverage. They even have like a podcast series out now all about the stuff going on with JK Rowling, and it's hosted by Megan Phelps Roper, who was one of the escapees from the Westboro Baptist Church. So the article is this whistleblower. She worked at the clinic and she revealed all of this crazy stuff going on there. I mean, like a lot of stuff, like parents being pressured to sign off on treatment for their kids. Kids with serious mental health issues were being prescribed hormones and puberty blockers, and they didn't even fully understand the side effects and what they were getting into with this stuff. For example, there's also a lot of autistic girls that think that they're transgender, which has been talked about for a long time, actually. I think Joe Rogan was one of the first people to platform this idea because he would have this author on. I think her name's Abigail Shriver. She did his show a lot. She was very big on a lot of the transgenderism being a social contagion among teenage girls and a lot of autistic girls identifying as transgender. Dr. Deborah So also did a lot of that. I think she has her own podcast and everything. You know, all these people have their own like media profiles. The article has a lot of stuff about underage girls getting top surgery, which is mastectomies, and then, of course, regretting it. The psychologists that sign off on this, right, because people think there's this very rigorous process of having to go on these drugs, but really, according to this article, and honestly what I already knew anyway, you can go into some of these clinics, not all of them, but the more radical ones, you can go into the clinic and you meet with the doctor or whatever, and then they send you off to a psychiatrist because the psychiatrist has to sign off on you. And then you think, oh, okay, well, these psychiatrists, I'm sure they're in there for months doing therapy and they're completely impartial. No, you have like one or two meetings with the psychiatrist, and the psychiatrist isn't always some impartial party. They're connected to the hospital anyway, so there's already kind of a financial interest in them getting, you know, more patients and more business at the hospital. And then even if you take out that financial element, many of the times they are ideologically on the side of, you know, gender care for children. So, you know, they believe in like, these kids are going to commit suicide if we don't cut their tits off and pump them full of drugs. So they're already going to like skew to that side of signing off on things. The whistleblower said that inside the clinic, there was a whole culture of not being able to push back against anything and speak out, and that the people at the top just wanted to get as many kids approved as possible, which is kind of like true of any workplace. Like anyone that's worked even in any kind of office or whatever, like if you're not at the top, of course, all of us people that are more on the bottom think, oh, why are they running things like this at the top, or why are they doing that? But even though they try to act like, oh yeah, you can speak out if you have a problem with something going on at work, but it's like, you all know that you actually can't. Not surprised that happens there. The whistleblower shared all the like horrifying side effects of these drugs. Like on girls, it can enlarge your clitoris. So it's kind of like when they go on testosterone and things like that, it can blow up your clitoris so it looks like a small penis. And then it gets really uncomfortable when you're wearing like jeans or underwear. That actually happened to China, the late wrestler. You guys know I'm a huge China fan. Well, she was always rumored to have been on steroids. She always denied it, but it was like obvious that she was either on steroids or she was some kind of hermaphrodite from a young age, which could be plausible, honestly. It could be either or. But she had a sex tape when she first got out of WWE, and she was like on drugs and crazy and partying everywhere. She did a sex tape with this other wrestler, X-Pac, and she had an enlarged clitoris in the sex tape, and no one had ever seen anything like that before. I remember when it dropped, because I grew up as a wrestling fan and, you know, wanting, it was like, let's go see the freak show of like what China's got going on down there. People were completely shocked by it. It totally looked like a small penis. And I'm assuming, again, either hermaphrodite or the result of testosterone and steroids and things like that. And then she did a porn career years later with Vivid Video, which was like an official thing. And her vagina looked normal then because she had the labiaplasty and, you know, they tied it up and everything. So she got rid of it. But, you know, this is a thing. It happens. And what I'm saying about the article is tip of the iceberg. I'm giving you like cliff notes on this. If you actually read the whole article and then you listen to some of the interviews that the whistleblower has been giving different outlets. It is horrifying, unfortunately not shocking to me because I've followed this stuff for a long time, but I think it's shocking to a lot of people. What's great about this whistleblower is she is a progressive leftist. She's married to a transgender man. I think they have kids they've adopted. I think she identifies as queer. Like, they tick all of the leftist progressive boxes, and we need more progressives to speak up about this stuff regarding what's happening to children with these surgeries, because, you know, usually they don't. They haven't for years. It has been total media silence on this issue. And then because of that, we get people like evangelical whackjob Matt Walsh becoming the leading voice against, you know, transgenderism. He is completely psychotic. If he had been around 20 years ago, before like Daily Wire and this new media internet system existed, he would have literally joined the Westboro Baptist Church. He would have popped up in one of those Louis Theroux documentaries. I'm certain of it. You know the Louis documentaries on the Westboro Baptist Church, and there's some guy in all of them, and he was some like family man that heard about their protests online. Then he moved his whole family over there to like live with the Westboro Baptist Church. That literally would have been Matt Walsh if it was a different time period. So I hate him. I reviewed his What is a Woman documentary on the pod. I was very fair to it on both sides of it. And he did have some really good stuff in there. Like, he exposed a lot of these kooky, gender affirmation doctors and how ideologically motivated they are, and how biased they are and what liars they are too. They mean they're completely dishonest. Matt Walsh is a total transphobe, in my opinion. He doesn't even believe that transgenderism exists at all. Like, he wants to ban it even for consenting adults, so he doesn't even want adults doing what they want with their own body. In the documentary, he totally linked transgenderism to some pedophile conspiracy, because of course a lot of the conservatives need to make everything have a grooming pedophile element to it now. So it's not enough to just say that like children shouldn't have these unnecessary surgeries when they're too young to be able to like decide and understand the consequences. No, instead it needs to be a pedophile conspiracy. He selectively only interviewed like the worst trannies he could find. Like, he just got crazy people. He got one that was, I think, like identifying as a puppy or a kitten or so, like one of those, you know, those furry freaks that think they're a cat on like TikTok, like some libs of TikTok freak. He didn't have any positive or normal trans representation at all, not even like Blair White, you know, or like Buck Angel, two kind of conservative, gender critical transgender people that have been living happy lives in their transition. He didn't even show any of that, because he had just one narrative that he was pushing with that. He's a Bible thumping nut. But the left, they have refused to engage on this issue. They completely ignore it. They completely refuse to critique this sort of medical industry around transgenderism, and all the media outlets bow to the activist pressure. Even if they want to cover it, they know that then, you know, GLAAD and all of these crazy organizations are going to come out after them. So they just don't do anything. And anybody that does even dare speak out or say anything gets smeared as a transphobe and, you know, has their career ruined. So then, of course, fucking Matt Walsh waltzes along and is like, hey, I'm going to make this my thing, and now become a huge star, which he is now. Like, I already knew about him for years anyway, but his career has skyrocketed ever since he got on the What is a Woman thing, which I agree with some of the stuff that he says on this. And I do like his whole thing of like, well, what is a woman? Can you define it? I think that's quite funny and like it's true, but I don't like the way he attacks like transgender adults and things like that. My whole thing is really just about kids, and then adults can do whatever the fuck they want. And there's been actually a controversy going on at the New York Times, because they have finally started speaking up about some of this stuff, regarding kids, because they weren't doing any trans critical coverage before. And they did, they ran some story, I think, about, you know, do kids really need all of these fucking drugs that these gender clinics are giving them? Do they really need like top surgery? Are they being misdiagnosed? Like, what is going on here? They finally like waded into the debate, and then there was all of this backlash. And then they also published an op-ed, which is a fucking opinion piece defending J.K. Rowling. And literally their staff members, like New York Times journalists who were supposed to be objective and, you know, wanting the truth and fucking reporting stuff, the fucking crybaby journalist there flipped out. They got all of these former New York Times contributors together to like sign a letter with this long list of demands for the New York Times, saying that they're doing transphobic coverage, that they're caving into right-wing talking points, that they need to hire more transgender journalists. I mean, it was just like ridiculous. So it is still kind of hard to speak up about some of this stuff in certain like liberal leftist circles, which is a shame. And that's why it's good when we have like Barry Weiss coming out with her organization, because it's not far right. It is a centrist thing. And they're actually giving a platform for people to talk about this stuff. Also on the Blocked and Reported podcast, that's another centrist pod. They have been covering the trans debate and issues for years. Actually, they were sort of one of the first non-right-wing entities to really get on that bandwagon. I think they were leftists before, although I don't know. They're definitely not right-wingers, so they're either on the left or they're in the middle. They do really good reporting and coverage on there. They're also really fucking corny. That's the thing about centrists, is centrists have no sense of humor. They try to make jokes, but they can't, because they're just not funny. Like, they don't have it, because they're always thinking of like rational, logical brain, that then when they try to like engage in any kind of like fun banter, it just doesn't, it's like a malfunctioning robot. And all of the jokes that Blocked and Reported, like the two hosts, Katie Herzog and Jesse Single, they always have like a back and forth at the start of the pod, and like their jokes are so bad. And it's like the same joke every single week. Like, oh, are you transphobic? Oh, like, it's just like, oh my God, you guys are so corny. But the actual research and coverage they do is really good. You've just got to like skip past the bit where they pretend that they're funny and have a personality. And they've been covering this issue for a really long time. And they did an episode recently, which they did paywall on their Substack, which, side note, I've been using Substack lately. It is so much better than Patreon. I kind of wish that I had like done Substack instead of Patreon, but too late now. And I paid to listen to this episode, and it was about, again, the hormones that they're giving kids, the puberty blockers, the surgeries, etc. And they talk about the side effects. It's really horrible. And then what they really get into, this is sort of the big thing, is they scrutinize these studies that have all come out about, you know, the transgender advocates bring out these official studies, and they go, look, this proves that if we don't transition children, they're going to commit suicide, and that the rate of detransition is like very rare, and everything we're doing is safe and effective. Doesn't that sound familiar of something else? It's all lies, because the studies are totally misleading. They leave out a bunch of like conflicting information that will like debunk what the study wants to say. And what happens is these studies come out, then all of the media outlets, the mainstream media outlets, run them without doing any of the fact checking of their own. They just take the study at its word. They don't go through it with like a fine tooth comb to, you know, check out like, hey, you know, does this make sense? Let me like read through every page of this study. No, they just take like the paragraph that agrees with them, don't investigate it. Blocked and Reported investigated the studies and found out that they're pretty much bullshit, and that there's actually no proof to justify pumping kids full of drugs and, you know, cutting off their boobs and everything at 15. Like, that's all a lie. We've been fed a lie. Again, I already knew this. You know in your gut. You know in your fucking gut with these things, but it has misled a lot of normies. And they've actually been rolling back and banning puberty blockers and hormone treatments in Scandinavian countries and in Europe. Like in Finland, they've done that because they're looking at the real data and following it. But America is, one, so under the thumb of the pharmaceutical industry, two, so polarized politically, where everything becomes a culture war issue, where you have to take the most extreme side on both things. So you have Matt Walsh, who just hates transgender people and doesn't want anyone to be trans under any circumstance. And then you have like leftists that, you know, want to mutilate your children. And then they're like, everyone in the middle is like either left out or like too scared to say anything. So they just like don't say anything at all and let everyone else fight it out. So America's still pushing this stuff. And the American mindset is, let's just fix everything with medical intervention, pills, surgeries, whatever. We're going to feed you Big Macs and the biggest fucking sodas in the world. It always goes viral whenever like foreigners come to America and they're like, wow, your portion size is like crazy, and why is this soda at McDonald's like triple the size of the one that I would get in another country, right? Because that's just America. So we're going to feed you all this shit, then you're going to get obese and diabetes and cancer, and then we'll sell you all of these like fucking medical treatments to fix it. By the way, the medical treatments that we're selling you are like more expensive here than anywhere else in the world, because like we have the best medicine in the world, so we're going to charge you like 50 times the price than you would get anywhere else. So that's just crazy. COVID's the same too, by the way, with this stuff, because like, not to go on a COVID rant, but Europe has started rolling back the vax for children. So a lot of these, I think Denmark, Norway, other countries like that started rolling these vaccines back for children like a really long time ago. Whereas in America, they're like, jab your baby with a booster or you're an anti-vaxxer. So, you know, America's fucking up when it comes to a lot of this stuff. And when I posted about the whistleblower article in the Free Press, like the other week, I was posting excerpts from it on my Instagram stories, Unpopular JP, if you don't follow me. And a lot of people were kind of shocked. Like, people were responding to me going, hang on, wait, it's that easy to get on these puberty blockers? I didn't realize. And I'm like, yeah, like they just accept these kids willy-nilly. It's a whole farce. They're just trying to get in as many kids as possible. They're lunatics. They're running off of like fake studies that they've either been fooled themselves or they're just like lying to you. I guess a lot of people have been duped by the false narrative that we've been fed for years on this. And I should add, just to be a little bit unbiased, there was a very lengthy Substack article that was debunking the thing in the Free Press from the whistleblower. Full disclosure, I didn't read it all. I did skim it. It opened... The opening of this article was just listing all the right-wing people and outlets that had jumped onto the Free Press's reporting. So that immediately, to me, kind of invalidated a lot of it, because it's like, okay, so what you're basically saying is that it's wrong because conservatives agree with it instead of actually attacking it properly. So straight off the bat, I think you're a partisan hack. But I did go through it, and she was attempting to debunk each point. I thought it was like pretty flimsy, the stuff she was trying to do to push back on this, but it is always good to check those things. But here's the thing with me, even if she debunked everything in that, you're not going to change my mind, because I had gender dysphoria growing up. I've talked about this on the pod before whenever I've discussed the whole transgender thing. So I'm never going to agree with you that giving kids these drugs and stuff is fine, because it's very, very common for gay and lesbian people to have some form of gender dysphoria growing up. Of course, when you're a teenager and you've got all your hormones growing and, you know, it's an angsty period and very tumultuous emotionally and all kinds of things are happening and you're not really in your right mind, and who knows if you're having problems at school, whatever. There's so many different factors, and it's very normal to have some form of gender dysphoria, and then you grow out of it. Like, once you finish puberty and you come into adulthood, it goes away. But when I was growing up, like from childhood up until early adulthood, I probably checked like every box that they would be. Like, if you go into the psychiatrist and they're looking at the things to tick off, to see if they're going to classify you as, you know, being transgender and needing medical intervention. Like, I liked girls' things from a young age. I liked dressing up in, like, girls' clothes and, like, dresses and things. You know, I probably would have done it more if I didn't have societal shame of, like, you know, boys aren't meant to, you know, wear dresses and stuff. Like, I probably, like, would have done it, like, more as, like, a little kid. I'm talking about, like, not when I was a teenager or anything, but, like, as, like, a little boy, I wanted to do stuff like that. I loved, like, Barbie dolls and girls things. I liked playing as the female characters in video games. I hated sport. I was depressed. I was suicidal for like a long time. I was in like hospital for it and everything when I was a teenager. Mental health issues, like literally all the stuff that they would, you'd be ticking off. And then of course, like, I grow up and become an adult and then I'm just gay. And now, like, you know, I love being male. I mean, the thought of being female is like, is so insane. I can't think of anything worse, no offense. And I still like plenty of girls' stuff, and I still like plenty of like guy stuff as well. I definitely still think I have more of a male brain and male interests for sure, but there's like plenty of like girly stuff that I like as well. It's just like normal. You know, the depression that I had growing up had nothing to do with gender identity. That was, again, just being confused growing up and having other issues. But if I had been raised in the time period that we're in now with the gender affirmation and, you know, if you tick all these boxes, you must be trans, like I could totally see myself having gone down that path, especially with me being someone that kind of goes against the grain. You know, my parents, I mean, maybe my dad would approve. No, actually, my dad probably wouldn't, even though he is a lefty. My parents wouldn't have approved if I was trying to be like transgender at that age, but that probably just would have like made me want to do it even more. Like, to, you know, and you rebel when you're a teenager as well. And then, of course, these transgender kids that are maybe having like social issues or depression and stuff, they find these communities online with like other transgender people. And I was actually very online as a kid from a young age. I was in like chat rooms, but they were gay chat rooms before I came out. But I was, you know, underage and fucking in these chat rooms and stuff. So again, I think back, if the transgender movement had been around, I probably would have been in these, you know, woke chat rooms with the fucking gender goblins filling me with all kinds of nonsense. And, oh yeah, you're probably trans. And like, I could totally have seen myself doing that, which clearly would have been like the hugest mistake. And I think it's a huge mistake for many, 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 many kids that are going through this. Of course, there's those cases where it's fine and they were meant to transition as a child. Like, even if you look at celebrities, like Kim Petras has that Unholy song with Sam Smith. I believe she was like the youngest person to transition. Where is she from? Sweden? I think she's Swedish. Wherever she's from, she transitioned as a child and I think was like the youngest transition person in the world at the time. And she clearly is like into being a girl and it all worked out fine. And it definitely works out for some, but those small amount of cases that are working out is not enough to justify the risk of giving any of this stuff to children at all. Like, let kids, you know, cross-dress. Like, I think that's fine. Like, yeah, let kids fucking do whatever they want to do with their gender identity as a kid, but just don't be giving them drugs and things that are going to damage them. And I've just always known in my gut that this stuff is so messed up. And There's a lot of good examples, like Kara Cunningham, who used to be Chris Crocker, who did the Leave Britney Alone video. I follow her on socials and I followed her career ever since, you know, Leave Britney Alone went viral, and she's transitioned now to a woman. She's the same age as me, so she's like mid-30s now, I guess. But she always experimented with gender. So she did masculine presentation, she did feminine presentation, she did in between, she would like wear wigs and do all kinds of things and really experimented with all kinds of gender. And then like as an adult in her 30s is when she went through and transitioned, and now she looks happier than ever and it seems to have worked out really well. Now, I'm not saying everyone needs to wait until they're like 30 to do it, but that is a good example of someone that actually fully explored their gender identity and then was able to make an informed decision as an adult versus a confused, you know, teenager or child that is taking these drugs. And Republicans and conservatives need to fucking focus on this without being sidetracked by the libs of TikTok crap, with, you know, not freaking out over the pride flags and drag queens. All of that stuff is just culture wars, like nonsense, and is complete crap. And this obsession with drag queens and pride parades. Someone actually did ask me the other day, like, oh, how come I don't understand why you think it's okay for drag queens to read to kids? I don't support it, but I also don't think it's like that big of an issue compared to other stuff. I don't think that, because the conservative way of thinking now is that then if there's a drag queen around a child, there must be like a pedophile in a dress, which is not true. I mean, yes, I'm sure it happens. It's happened before. But I mean, on average, no. I'd actually be more worried about having drag queens around my kids just in the fact that I know they're going to be probably the children's books they're reading are like weird LGBT books where it's like, you can be whatever you want to be. Like, you can be non-binary. Like, that stuff I don't want my kids, you know, listening to. So I get the pushback on it, but whatever. This obsession with like drag queens and everyone being a pedophile and flipping out over every libs of TikTok video. I mean, I've had to unfollow some of these accounts. There was another one that I used to follow, Garbage Human, on Instagram that I thought was quite funny, and they're just so homophobic and vile now. And like, I read the comment section on their posts, and it's just like literally like the most disgusting stuff. So yeah, I feel like conservatives had a really good opportunity to be like the sensible person in the room, to be the Barry Weiss, and to just focus on like the medical aspect of it and, you know, transitioning children and like going by like the real data and, you know, scrutinizing some of the data that they're using, the fake data that to try and like justify these things. But instead it turns into, let's just be obsessed with like whatever libs of TikTok posted, and why do I have to see a rainbow flag? I saw someone else on some conservative, you know, online personality going into Target and like pulling down a rainbow thing and like treading on it. Like, it's just such a fucking joke. So just focus on the real shit, people. Anyway, oh yeah, of course. Look, I completely rambled on that when I said I wasn't going to go deep. There we go.
Munchausen syndrome has been renamed factitious disorder, wherein those affected feign disease, illness, or psychological trauma to draw attention, sympathy, or reassurance to themselves. It's related to Munchausen by proxy, which is a whole...
That's what I was about to say. I've heard of Munchausen by proxy.
Okay. Well, Munchausen is... And I want to cry to even say this out loud, but it's something that people could create if they might not be sick, but they make themselves sick.
So speaking of unnecessary medical intervention, I want to talk about this newly autistic Australian celebrity, M. Rusciano. I've been going back and forth. Should I talk about this? Should I not? I want to get into it. We're going in deep. Before I proceed, let me just give you all the disclaimers. I know that, you know, the people that listen to me regularly, they know the vibe here. But if we get any like drive-by people or people that just aren't used to listening to the pod, this is what's up. I'm not a doctor, clearly. It's all my personal opinion. I can say whatever I want. I can't speak for anybody else. I don't know anyone's medical diagnosis. I'm just someone on the internet that looks at things and then forms an opinion on it. These are my own biased personal views on a situation that don't negate anybody else's experience. Everyone is entitled to whatever the fuck they want. So that's what's up, okay? So you guys know that I'm really into this whole like thing of you know, woke female celebs all coming down with ADHD and autism. It's sort of my favorite thing. Been very on this bandwagon for a while. It all started with Demi Burnett from Bachelor in Paradise in the States, but now it's just blown up in Australia. I know that it's happening in the UK as well. I don't know how much it's happening in America, but definitely big in Australia, starting to pop up a lot in the UK. And we're starting to see a shift now from the ADHD diagnosis to the autism realm. So Demi Burnett, the one that really started it all, one of my favorite Bachelor stars, TV gold. I don't know how she hasn't been cast on other shows like outside of Bachelor, because she's that good. Like, I just think she's great. She was the villain on Gay Colton's season. Then she went on Bachelor in Paradise. That's where she really became a big name, because she came out as bisexual on the show, and then she said, hey, I've got a girlfriend on the outside, and she's my secret girlfriend, and I want to bring her into the show and start dating her here, which obviously is completely against the rules. And actually, it's like a whole thing in Bachelor in Paradise that every season someone gets caught having some kind of like secret relationship, and then it gets exposed on the show, and it's like, hey, you're not here for the right reasons. You just came on for television. Clearly that's what she did, but because it was the first ever queer relationship they had had on Bachelor, and you know, all of the woke fans are like, we need more diversity. We need like a trans season of The Bachelor. They really like leaned into this, and they gave Demi and this girlfriend of hers this fairy tale edit. They flew the girlfriend in. They just like dated each other on the show, completely like flouting all of the rules. Then on the finale, they get engaged. Of course, they never got married because it was all a storyline for television. Demi was just using her for publicity. I don't know if the girlfriend was in on it or if she was kind of like collateral damage, but they split a few months later, and then Demi started dating some guy again. But like, she got so much fame from this at the time. Like, she got on Ellen, she got on Good Morning America, she was doing all these interviews about LGBT representation. She kept reappearing on The Bachelor and The Bachelorette, which, you know, usually, like, you're on the show and then you're off the show, but, like, they kept bringing her back for, like, cameos. They put her on WWE Raw. She got 1 million followers on Instagram. She was getting all of the best influencer deals and stuff. She got a podcast, the whole thing. Then fast forward, she's broken up with, you know, the fake lesbian fiance. She's dating some guy. I think she broke up with the guy. The hype has died down. We have a new cast of Bachelor people, new villains. So she goes back on Bachelor in Paradise to kind of, you know, get the juice going again. And she comes off really bad. Now, I loved her on it because I love a villain and I think she's, you know, fabulous. But, like, everyone else hated her. She was just starting all of this, like, unnecessary drama. She had a huge ego. Like, this is the Demi show. Like, I'm the biggest star on The Bachelor. It's all about me. And she just, like, looked like an idiot, and she's kind of like putting all the other women down, and the guys were rejecting her. She just came off really bad, and everyone hated her then. She started losing followers, and then a few months later, she came out as autistic. This is when the alarm bells sort of started going off for me, just because I knew she'd already done this like sort of semi-fake lesbian thing for TV, and now suddenly she's autistic, and of course she makes a huge deal about it. All of her content became about being autistic. Every interview she did, every social media post, she did a new podcast. It was all about being autistic. She became like just a fan favorite again on the show. All of the losers that were like trolling her before on the subreddit, suddenly they're like praising her. And oh, she's bringing so much awareness to neurodivergent women. Like, she's incredible. And I'm not saying that she doesn't have mild autism. She actually might. Like, she's a little kooky, but just when I saw how much she was milking it, you know, my BS detector starts going off. And I started to notice that I felt like she was acting autistic on Instagram. So, like, her Instagram captions and the, like, weird posts she started doing, I'm like, you're, like, performing autistic tics. Like, you're acting like you're a little bit, like, intellectually disabled or something when before you never acted like this and now suddenly you have. So I felt like she was doing autism face, essentially. And at the same time, we start having this huge wave of Australian celebrities here coming out with ADHD. And, like, every second influencer now here has ADHD. And I was hearing anecdotal stories about, you know, women everywhere getting it, friends of a friend, friends of mine even. And I already covered this on my podcast a little bit when I got into the whole thing about the people on TikTok that were pretending to have multiple personality disorders. If you've been listening to my pod for a really long time, you'll remember that episode. I feel like I was one of the first people to cover that. I mean, I'm sure people did it before me, but I feel like not that many people were talking about it. But it's the DID, dissociative identity disorder. It's all fake. Doctors have confirmed it's fake, but it's this whole subculture on TikTok with these Zoomers who go on there and they pretend that they have all these like people living inside of them, and then they switch to the different people, and, you know, the people inside them are all like trans and children, and they change their voice and talk in the personality of the other person. They have all of this lingo to describe it. They're like, I'm a DID system. This is what the system's name is now. This person inside of me is fronting the system. It's a whole fucking thing. It's all bullshit, right? And then there's also the Tourette's TikTok where, you know, woke teenagers show off their tics like Amy Poehler and Deuce Bigelow. I remember hearing for years that the way Tourette's was represented in Deuce Bigelow was, you know, completely fake and not representative of real Tourette's syndrome. And now we have like an army of teenage girls on TikTok doing Rob Schneider bits. The biggest Tourette's influencer, her name is Baylen Dupree. She has about 8 million followers. She was on the Dr. Phil show. She gets speculated a lot that she's faking her Tourette's. Not to get totally sidetracked now down a Tourette's rabbit hole, but my theory on Baylen is that she does have Tourette's, but I think she completely exaggerates it and plays it up for content on TikTok. Like, some of the things she does on TikTok are so ridiculous. Like, there's one where she's like baking a cake with Tourette's, and then she gets an egg, and then she like cracks the egg on her forehead because, you know, her tic makes her fling her hand onto her forehead with the egg, and then the egg like perfectly breaks and like plops into the flour where she's making the pancakes. Like, she just does fucking stupid stuff like that. And it's like, clearly that's not part of your Tourette. So, you know, I think, I don't know how severe her Tourette's is. It could be quite severe. It could be mild, but whatever it is, she's definitely amping it up for social media. But I do believe that she has it. So back to Australia, ADHD is on fire. You know, coincidentally, right after lockdowns is when everyone starts getting it because, you know, they're all locked in their house on TikTok because we know that the lockdowns are when TikTok actually completely blew up. And all the people getting it are the same kind of person. White, female, social media famous, like, you know, a podcaster or an influencer. They're all like left-wing, progressive, you know, feminist, believe all women type of politics. I even predicted that Abby Chatfield was going to get ADHD. Like, I predicted that on the podcast. And like 2 weeks later, she's like, I got my diagnosis, guys. And she sort of alluded to doctor shopping because she said that she paid her assistant to call around Australia to like find someone to diagnose her, something like that. I might not be quoting her correctly, but that's how she got hers. And of course, once they get ADHD, it becomes the focal point of all of their content. It's like, hi guys, I made you an ADHD-friendly Spotify playlist. Not kidding, like Abby actually said that the other day. Hi guys, oh my God, I couldn't find my keys because I have ADHD. Oh my God, my brain's just crazy. Guys, I didn't finish watching Maths last night because of my ADHD. I can't stop listening to this song. This is my hyperfixation song. That's what Em Rusciano just did. She got addicted to a song like everyone does. You know when a pop song comes out? Like I always listen to New Jeans, right? K-pop. I listen to the same song like 20 times a day when I'm really into a song. Now it's not being addicted to a song, guys. It's your hyperfixation song because you have ADHD. So listening to a song on repeat is actually a symptom of your ADHD, according to these people. So Em Rusciano is the main celebrity that has kind of like caught my eye with all of this. Now, if you're not in Australia, I mean, even if you are in Australia, you may not know her history because it's not like she's, you know, Nicole Kidman. But if you don't know anything about her, she got famous about 20 years ago on one of the like really early seasons of Australian Idol. And then from there, she didn't have a music career, but she went into commercial radio here. She was in and out of radio for years and, you know, she did books and did different things. And now she is a very successful podcaster. She has a huge podcast that was picked up as a Spotify exclusive here. She is a touring performer. So she does live shows where it's like comedy and music and, you know, chit chat and just, you know, like a variety show almost. She's a lot like Jameela Jamil in that she's like very, very woke and she gets into a lot of social media controversies because she's very opinionated and she seems to have like this never-ending laundry list of medical conditions. Like, to give you an example of how woke she is, okay, she performs on stage in giant vagina costumes like the, you know, the Women's March. Like, she would have been at the Women's March dressed as a big vagina because she dances around and sings a song about a vagina while dressed as a vagina with rainbow flags behind her. Of course, she's a straight, you know, married woman of, I don't know, sure she's married. She's a straight woman with a partner and children and stuff, but, you know, she has drag queens and rainbow glitter and she's white and dressed as a vagina. And one time on her Instagram, not that long ago, she issued an apology because she was talking about abortion of, I think it was when there was the whole thing about Roe v. Wade, you know, bubbling up again. And she was talking about abortion and she hadn't specified that transgender men can get pregnant. And then one of her followers was like, Em, you've used exclusionary language. And then Em went on her Instagram and she was like, guys, I have to address this. I will do better. I will be better. Yes, transgender men can get pregnant. So that's how woke she is. Okay. So she came out as having ADHD in 2021. Really started leaning into it, always talking about it, always posting about it, not just on her own social media channels and like podcasts, but doing interviews with media outlets. She got her first Stella magazine cover off the back of her ADHD. Now, Stella magazine in Australia, no one cares about it, right? Like, no one knows about it. It's like an industry magazine where if you, like, it's important if you're in the media industry here because it's sort of a sign that you're relevant. Like, the everyday person doesn't read it or know about it, but it's kind of like a big deal. So she gets on Stella magazine And a few months after she is diagnosed with ADHD and getting all this attention, then she announces, my daughter, my teenage daughter, who's 14, has been diagnosed with ADHD as well. Shortly after that, she announces, my son, my three-year-old son, has now been diagnosed with autism. Then after that, M self-diagnoses herself as autistic. Then a few months after that, she finally gets her official diagnosis that she's autistic as well. So in about 18 months, we have her with ADHD, her daughter with ADHD, her son with autism, her with autism, okay? All in this small window. A lot going down, okay? And we'll get into the autism of it all in a second, but back to the ADHD, as she's still riding this ADHD media wave, she gets to address the National Press Club in Australia. This was in August. She made a really big deal about it. It was like the proudest moment of her career. She still talks about it now all the time. The National Press Club is another stellar magazine where no real person knows what it is. No real person actually cares about it, but it's important to a very select group of people. So the snooty government-sponsored journalists are like SBS and ABC, you know, certain academics that would have gotten every single thing wrong about COVID, that type of crowd, they love the National Press Club. So she's appealing to a sort of elite crowd that honestly, like, couldn't give a fuck about her before, didn't know who she really was, probably remembered her from media scandals that she had when she was in commercial radio, which I'm going to get into. But one of the things she did in her speech at the press club, which went for like an hour, was she addressed her time on commercial radio. And long story short on that, before she was a podcaster, she got this really big spot in breakfast radio here, which is, you know, it's a big gig to get. It's very high paying. Australia is obviously a smaller market than the US. So if you're like the breakfast radio person in like one of the big cities like Melbourne or Sydney, it's a really big deal. And like, you're really like put into the spotlight in a big way. And it was a total fucking disaster. People said she was awful to work with. Her co-host quit. The producer quit. The publicist refused to work with her. People went to the media saying she was insecure. She was stubborn. She wouldn't compromise. Everything. Like, it was just a nightmare. And she's acknowledged all of this too. Like, she's done interviews and said, yeah, I was, you know, not the best during those times. She also did say, this is in her defense, she said that it was the stress of being micromanaged. She also said she had a miscarriage around that time, which added, you know, to her kind of mental state and behavior. Commercial radio in Australia is really full on. Like, you live and die by these rating surveys. Australia is really just like backwards with media and they just don't get it. So I can imagine that her being a creative person would have had all of these suits like breathing down her neck and going, oh, you've got to do more, you know, segments like this. And she probably wasn't allowed to be herself. And I imagine that she would have hated it. I'm a creative person like M is. I actually did a, not on the scale of Rosciano. I did a very tiny show about K-pop for a network here on, it was just like an online show and it was on radio as well. And that was very produced and like, I could not fake it. And now I look back and I think, God, you were kind of unprofessional. Like, we would go on air and then because my, you know, co-host was like fucking annoying or something like that, or we had to do like some stupid segment that I just thought was like, you know, embarrassing to do, like you could see that I was not feeling the vibe on air. So like I relate to not being able to be like put in a box like that. But you know, am I mean to people? No, I'm just more withdrawn and just kind of like keep to myself. I'm not like a fucking nightmare. But you know, again, I didn't have what she had where she had like all this pressure and it was like her show leading the show, etc. Whatever. She was a bitch on radio. That's the point. So I do feel her on that, but it gave her a really bad reputation in the industry. And I think it was really hard for her to get hired for certain jobs afterwards, which is why she went into podcasting during the pandemic. Her podcast really took off and now she's a Spotify exclusive making a lot of fucking money. So she addresses the National Press Club and she kind of blames her behavior on radio on her ADHD. She, it's what she said in her speech. This is just like one portion of the hour-long speech. I know now that a person with rejection sensitivity dysphoria, low self-esteem, time blindness, someone who is very blunt, has a complete inability to regulate her emotions and is hypersensitive to external stimuli should be nowhere near the breakfast radio environment. It brought out the very worst of my undiagnosed ADHD symptoms. It brought out the worst in me as a human. So she gets like so much good press off of this National Press Club address. Like every media outlet covered it. Like all of the important ones that she normally would never get into, that would never care about her, wrote about her, all the elite newspapers. She's on the morning news with like, psychiatrists coming on to weigh in on ADHD and talk about the rise in women being diagnosed, you know, the whole thing. And then she comes out with the autism a few months later, and suddenly her content makes this big shift from ADHD-centered to autism-centered. She starts talking about autism all the time. She's crying about it. She's complaining that people don't believe her. She's angry that people say that it's a fad, just a lot of autism talk. I'm following it all. I'm feeling kind of suspicious. Not suspicious so much of the diagnosis itself, like, you know, I believe that she got a diagnosis. Do I think every diagnosis that you get is legitimate? Of course not. People doctor shop. We know, like I just talked about the transgender stuff, right? In the segment before this, okay? So we know about doctors now are being discouraged from telling people that they're overweight because it can be seen as fat shaming. The patient can put in complaints. Like political correctness has definitely taken over the medical establishment in parts of it, not the whole thing. So yeah, just because you say you're diagnosed, do I necessarily mean that means that you have what you have? No, but I'm sure she has a diagnosis. But I'm just suspicious of the way that not just M. Rusciano, but like Abby Chatfield and all of them, how just seemingly overnight their whole brand just comes to being like, I'm neurodivergent, I can't find my keys. You know, it's like with intersectionality in the oppression Olympics, white women and white gay men such as myself, so I've experienced this, like we got really pushed aside because trans people and black people started getting all of the like attention when it comes to being a, you know, struggling minority. So as soon as this kind of happened, I just feel like you see all these white women and like gay guys coming out as like, I'm non-binary, I'm neurodivergent, I'm pansexual, just like adding all of these things. These are my pronouns, like stuff that was never there before, because they're trying to like, you know, keep up with the black trans women in the wheelchair that is getting all the gigs now. Now, shit really hit the fan about 2 weeks ago over a Harry Styles concert. Of course, M. Rusciano is a huge Harry Styles fan. That's totally, don't get me started on her music. I mean, she performs like Alanis Morissette covers and stuff, like that's her vibe. That's her vibe, okay? And about a week before the concert, she goes on Instagram to gush effusively about how she just discovered that Marvel Stadium has a sensory room for autistic people, and then inside the room are noise-canceling headphones and beanbags and fidget tools. So as an autistic person herself, she's been feeling very anxious about the Harry Styles concert, but now she knows that if it gets too much for her, she can just like run off to a safe space in the sensory room. Guys, this chick worked in commercial radio, which is cutthroat and full on. She was on Australian Idol, okay? She hosts TV shows. Like we have a show here, The Project. It's terrible, but it's like a nightly news panel show, kind of like The View. She's a regular like fill-in guest on that. She tours Australia performing stand-up comedy, live music, like across the country, right? She'll be covered in glitter, rainbows, dressed like a fucking vagina, dancing around. But now at the Harry Styles concert, she may need the sensory room because, you know, she's autistic now, guys. She's got to seek solace in the sensory room. So of course I write about this for Daily Mail. You know, I saw it on her stories. I was like, girl, I write a story on the Daily Mail. And it blows up. And then this other media personality here, Meshel Lori, goes on Facebook and fucking blasts the shit out of M. And this was a really big deal because nobody has said shit about this trend at all. Like, everyone's scared to sort of talk about it. No one in Australian media is brave enough to go, hey, like, I don't know, this seems a little off, this whole trend or whatever. And also, Meshel has very similar kind of, a very similar audience to M's. It's like progressive left wing, you know, white female audience of the same kind of age group. And nobody here is allowed to express any skepticism towards this stuff. So for her to come out, it's like really quite shocking. The only other person that came out about this was actually this other Bachelor star, Megan Marks. And she commented on how some influencers were maybe getting ADHD as a trend because they wanted to use the, they wanted the drugs because, you know, they help you concentrate, they can help you lose weight, all sorts of things. And then Abby Chatfield, of course, and Ambrosiano both came for Meghan Marks and, you know, kind of eviscerated her a bit, and all the woke people went after Meghan Marks. How dare you? You're an ableist. How dare you say that? No one would ever use prescription drugs for any other reason than to treat their medical condition. Are you crazy? It was just like so delusional. But anyway, I won't read out everything that Meschel said just because it's like so long and in so many different posts, but she literally called Em a cunt. Her words, not mine. She called her a clout chasing cunt who was lying and wanted attention. Now, Meschel also has an autistic child, I think. So it hit close to home for her because she's seeing a privileged celebrity like Ambrosiano and Abby Chatfield and all these others milking it on social media and pretending that they suddenly may need, you know, sensory rooms at concerts when any parent of an autistic child that is like further, you know, that's a higher level, like a level two or a level three autism, they're going to look at shit like that as like, this is some like first world problems. I mean, I had Zach Peter on the podcast to talk about this autism trend a while ago. He was almost in tears discussing it because his brother is more severely autistic. He's worked in the nonprofit sector with autism, so he's all across it. And he was like disgusted that there are influencers that are either faking, or even if they're not faking it, just, you know, milking it in the way that they are for clout on social media. So here's some of what Meschel said. Let me get this up. It's pretty funny. She wrote, she blocked me last time I called her out, but could Ambrosiano please list the concerts she's had to leave early or not attend because they didn't provide a sensory inclusion room? Thank you. Then she said, I have a close family member on the spectrum and I don't appreciate people leaping on the bandwagon for clout to excuse the appalling behavior that's caused their previous poor career outcomes. A cunt is just a cunt and will always be a cunt. Many beautiful people are on the autism spectrum and they should never be confused with the kind of people who try to claim the diagnosis retroactively to explain their poor behavior. So, you know, clearly she's referring to Em's antics on commercial radio, which are very well documented. And also Ambrosiano does not have a good reputation in the industry. I've talked to people in this Australian industry that are like, no, she's the worst. You know, she's awful. So that's Em's reputation here. This is some other stuff Meschel said. As the exhausted mother of an ASD child, I stand by what I said regarding certain adults who are well known for attention seeking and their recent constant posts about their ASD diagnoses. I get tired of it. It isn't about special areas at concert venues. It's a daily grind like no other. And I did breakfast radio for 15 years. I thought I knew what a daily grind was. I was wrong. So next time you hear a grown celebrity say they're on the spectrum, please whisper in your mind, fuck you, you successful motherfucker. Obviously, you aren't very far along the spectrum, otherwise you'd have been kicked out of your classrooms because our education system only recognized this shit and learned to deal with it 10 years ago. Otherwise, you're lying. I totally agree with what she said, by the way. Totally see where she's coming from, but everyone turned on her. Like, she just was copying it. She had to put her comments on social media on, like, you know, moderated because everyone was like, you're ableist. How dare you attack another woman? How could you think that she's lying about her diagnosis? It's kind of like people missed the big picture of this because they just sort of, people are so stupid and don't look at the whole picture. So they just think that it's like Meschel being mean and not believing Em's diagnosis. They're not looking at it all of like Em's history, her attention seeking, the timing of it all, the way she monetizes her victimhood, where Meschel is coming from as the parent of autistic child, you know, the trend in media, all of it. They made it into a very black and white issue of like, well, Em is diagnosed, so how dare you question that? As if, again, like, because you have a diagnosis, that means it's legit. No, it doesn't. Em issued a few responses to Meschel's tirade. So the first The first one was, I think it was the next day or 2 days after. She jumps on Instagram in her car. She looks very distressed. She's in the front seat. She says she can't regulate her emotions because of her autism and how much stress she's under. It's triggering her autism. And she wants to hide, but she knows that she can't because representation, you know, matters too much. And it's up to her to, like, be the face of this with, you know, these other autistic celebrities that she named. And that, you know, females with autism really need to be out there in media because everyone thinks that autism is just Dustin Hoffman in Rain Man, and she wants to be out there and she has the receipts to prove that she's autistic and that she's not lying. And people think that she's high functioning, but according to Emma Rusciano, she's actually not high functioning at all. She's extremely dysfunctional and she's just been masking to survive all of her life. In this video, she was stimming, which is like a repetitious fidgeting that autistic people do. I think she was faking her stimming in the video 100%. I watched the video. As soon as I saw it, I'm like, oh, she's faking stimming. Like, I've followed her for years, okay? We've seen her, like, crying on the radio and on a podcast and stuff like that. You know, she's an emotional, like, she's a big character, a big personality, okay? I've never seen her anxiously fidgeting with her clothes while blinking and shutting her eyes, like, you know, clenching her eyes shut as she talks. I can't regulate my emotions. It was like a performance of autistic tics. I thought she looked like she was auditioning for the role of, like, a handicapped person in, like, a Netflix film. Like, it was just, I was like, nah, this is such a load of shit. Let a few days go by and she drops her podcast episode. She makes the whole podcast about this, addressing it, which, you know, why wouldn't you? It was a big story in the media. She wants to get her side out there. So good for you. The podcast is filmed because it's, you know, very successful. It's with Spotify. So they film it as well for social media. And she's crying. She's stimming again. The stimming totally looked fake. Once again, she's acting like Rain Man. She's sitting there, you know, pulling at her clothing and, you know, doing these weird tics. And I'm like, yeah, I've never fucking seen you do this before. Now suddenly, like, you stim everywhere you go now that you're autistic. And she explains a lot on the podcast. It was a really long episode. She said that she felt like she was autistic when she took her son in to get diagnosed. So when he's getting diagnosed, she realized, hey, I match all the same criteria too. So from there, she starts self-diagnosing as autistic. She admits this, and she even says at the end of the podcast, she encourages other people to self-diagnose as well, because she was like, there's a really long waiting list to get diagnosed. So if you match this criteria, don't be afraid to self-diagnose. From that point, when she identified with her son's symptoms, she goes on this journey to get her own diagnosis. So she goes to a male psychiatrist first, who she says dismissed her completely. This is what he said. Okay, I'm reading out her quotes. Initially, I met with a male psychiatrist who completely disregarded even entertaining the idea that I was autistic. And he listed why. Because you don't have ritualistic behavior, you don't talk in monotone, you don't have any obvious stims. Then she said that she has been masking her symptoms her entire life. That's why no one sees the sign, because she's just been masking the whole time. Then she says, boys are encouraged to be brave and go for things and be bold and loud, whereas girls are told to be a good girl, behave yourself. Then she goes on and says there's not enough research on the female presentation of autism, that there's zero research into gender non-binary, gender fluid, and gender non-conforming people when it comes to the condition. That's obviously a load of shit, because, I mean, non-binary is not even a real thing. So why the fuck would they be investigating autism among people that, you know, identify as non-binary with they, them, when that isn't even a real thing? So that's, like, ridiculous. And the gendered statement about how boys are encouraged to be brave and go for things and be bold and loud, and girls are told to be a good girl and behave yourself, this is just a vague generalization that means nothing. There's been a debate for years about, as long as I can remember, about boys being overprescribed Ritalin, because boys are naturally more hyperactive and fidgety than girls are. Like, everyone knows this. This isn't some kind of, like, social conditioning. That's, like, a biological difference. Anyone that has been in high school, okay, I'm not talking about the top classes for the smarty pants fucking nerds that all, like, do as they're told. And I'm not talking about the dumb classes, where everyone in the dumb class is, which is the class that I was in, everyone is misbehaving and can't sit still and can like barely string a sentence together. The middle classes, where you get the average level of intelligence, everyone knows that it's the boys that are like, you know, doing spitballs at each other and stuff. And like girls will like talk and like gossip a bit or like draw on their notepads and stuff, but they're not as like fidgety and hyperactive and stuff as boys are. And boys are not encouraged to do this. Actually, when boys do this, they're like put on detention or told to go wait outside because they're too difficult to deal with. And then they're like put on fucking Ritalin. So for her to like come out with this just gender nonsense about how boys and girls are like socialized, that's just a complete load of shit. So anyway, she gets dismissed by this male psychiatrist who's like, you don't have autism. Like, what are you talking about? So then she continues her journey. She's like, I'm not giving up. So then she finds a female doctor, of course. She doesn't specify what kind of doctor. I assume a psychiatrist because I don't know if you can get diagnosed by anyone else. I'm not sure, but whatever. She doesn't specify, but she finds this female doctor, and the female doctor happens to be a huge fan of her podcast. How fortunate. And then this huge fan of her podcast fits her in because all the appointments are booked out. So this fan of her podcast sees M on her day off, and she fits her in on her weekend on her day off and diagnoses her. So she doctor shopped for the diagnosis she wanted, literally. I mean, that's doctor shopping. You get turned down. So, and she, remember, she was already self-diagnosing. So before she even got autism, she starts self-diagnosing as it. We have a video of her on Daily Mail where she was talking about her son and how she was sort of concerned about her son's future. But then she's like, you know, for people that, or for neurodivergent people that have ADHD and autism, as I do, like she said something like that. So we're like, wait, you're autistic? Because this is before she had said that. And then, so she's self-diagnosing, goes to the doctor, he goes, you're not autistic. Then finds another one who's a fan of her show to get her diagnosis. So guys, now you know why I'm like, yeah, just because you got a diagnosis doesn't mean you are autistic. It also doesn't mean that she's not autistic, because I could see a lot of her behavior that she could have mild autism, for sure. Totally. Like, yeah, she could definitely check out. I mean, her problematic behavior in radio could be down to that, although, I mean, she said it was because of her ADHD before, so who knows, but it could have been because something's, you know, not right upstairs. And she talks about the process that she went through to get diagnosed. And she's like, you know, it's very thorough. The psychiatrist interviews, you know, all of your friends and family. Well, these interviews, from way she described them, do not sound like Guantanamo Bay style interrogations. Because she said that, oh no, not her, actually her co-host, who was her best friend who co-hosts her podcast with her. He's like, oh yeah, I got interviewed too. They sent me they emailed me a questionnaire. So I'm like, what, is this a survey where you just get emailed a questionnaire and you just tick it yes or no and send it back? And then whoever the psych is just is like, okay, they ticked yes, yes, yes here. All right, yep, we're diagnosing you. So M reads out her diagnosis on air, kind of like very Aviva Drescher when she brought her medical records because she didn't want to go on the cast trip. And M reads out the diagnosis. This part stood out to me because I thought this was kind of odd. It is my opinion that M will likely benefit from psychology, where she can be supported to process the diagnosis as well as any grief that may follow as she reflects on past hurts and misunderstandings from others. What? Why is that in the diagnosis, that you are reflecting on grief and past hurts because people misunderstood you? That is what a doctor that is a fan of M. Rusciano's podcast would write in a medical assessment. That's all I'll say. Let me read to you a text I got from somebody in the industry. I'm not going to name who it is, and I'm actually not even going to read out the whole message because I don't want anyone to figure out who it is. This is the text. Angie Ken, M. Rusciano, Abby Chatfield, and so many other former reality types have pushed their 15 minutes by using neurodiversity as a platform to gain attention. They are narcissistic women who think they're creating awareness, but I can see through it. Some of these people are more talented than others, but come on, most people are neurodivergent on some scale. However, these girls lean into it for content, which is really upsetting for people who have loved ones properly affected. Emma's making this her whole personality at the moment. It's like in Breakfast Radio, where producers would construct a story arc for the survey period. The fake fidgeting and stimming is new. Then this person also mentioned some stories of working with M, and they had some not nice things to say about what it's like to work with M behind the scenes, and that she's actually quite different behind the scenes than how she's sort of the victim that she plays on air and on her podcast, etc., which would check out with what everyone else said that worked with her in commercial radio. You know, I've heard from multiple people in the industry that she's not great to work with. Okay, but you know what? In her defense, I'll add this in. She does keep getting hired to appear on the project, and her co-host hasn't quit her podcast, and she does have Aussie celebrities on her podcast, so she obviously does have some friends in the industry. So, you know, who knows? Guys, I have many enemies in the podcasting space as well, so who am I to, like, you know, fucking throw stones from glass houses? So also on the podcast, like, Em's crying, saying that she may not be able to attend the Harry Styles concert because of all the media attention around it. And then, of course, she does go to the concert anyway, and she's dancing up a storm on the dance floor. And from here, this actress Chloe Hayden, she is from Netflix's Heartbreak High, which is an Australian show, but I believe it's popular internationally. She is She's quote, autistic, ADHD, and chronically ill. That's according to her Instagram bio. She's friends with M. She's been on M's podcast. She tours. She does a lot of media tours all about how she's autistic and neurodivergent. It's like her whole brand. I don't know if she fakes it or not, because I didn't follow her beforehand. Like, I always just knew her as autistic, so I'm sure she is, but it's like her thing, right? And she's got on the cover of, like, Marie Claire magazine talking about it, all that stuff. Chloe Hayden went to the Harry Styles concert as well, and then she was apparently denied access to the sensory room because she was told that she didn't look autistic enough. And then she went on a rampage on social media afterwards. She was calling out Marvel Stadium, filing an official complaint. She shared this complaint with a newspaper here. Then she's demanding there be more sensory rooms at the stadium. The staff need to be trained better. To my knowledge, Marvel Stadium obliged, because that could be really bad PR for them. I imagine what probably happened was because of the media attention that the original story from Emma Roshiano got, with her needing the sensory room, that then suddenly all these other people were aware of the sensory room, and you had probably people that actually wanted to use it legitimately, and then you probably just had people that were like, oh, hey, I heard there's a sensory room, like, let's go, like, chill out in there for a bit. And the staff were probably forced to, like, they were just getting too many requests for it. And Chloe Hayden probably didn't. She said, you know, I didn't look autistic enough. She probably fucking didn't, because it's clearly for, like, you know, a parent that's taking their very autistic child that may potentially have a freak out at the concert. And if they're having a freak out, they can go to the room. It's not just someone that may be, like, so mildly autistic that it's like, oh, I'm a bit overwhelmed, I need to go into the sensory room. Like, it's clearly for, like, a more serious case. So I'm not surprised that they turned her away. And according to her Instagram, she, like, went there with her noise-canceling headphones anyway. So, girl, if you can film Heartbreak High and you can walk red carpets and you can do, like, media interviews and all of this shit and be a YouTuber as well, which she is, I'm sure you're okay to bring your fucking noise-canceling headphones and then to step into the hallway where it's quiet and get away from the crowd, put your headphones on, and I'm sure you've got a fidget tool in your pocket and you can calm down there. I don't think you need to march to the sensory room and then take to social media to, like, cancel Marvel Stadium. And after it happened, Emma Roshiano, of course, is, like, retweeting Chloe, and the retweets are all about how they've done the math, and by their calculations, there's at least 9,000 people that need access to sensory rooms at Marvel Stadium, and that they're demanding that this happen, which is totally insane. Marvel Stadium houses about 60,000 people if it's sold out. I think less. I think it's 58,000 capacity. Are you telling me you're going to make room for 9,000 people of that to be in a sensory room? That's fucking absurd. That's never going to happen. That is impossible. That is, like, a complete abuse of, like, disabled spaces. Like I said before, these rooms are for, like, a mum that has taken their kid, who's a big Harry Styles fan, and then they're having like an episode in the crowd and they need to like calm down in the sensory room and use the fidget tools and stuff. It's not for the fucking M. Rossianos of the world to cosplay as disabled and assert their imagined victimhood. And when I've been covering all of this, like at Daily Mail and on my podcast and just everywhere, right? Beginning with the ADHD, I read this stuff and I'm like, wow, that is so me. First with the ADHD symptoms and now with the autism. Oh my God, I read it all. I go, this is so me. I think to myself, this would explain so much about my time in high school. I mean, guys, you listen to me. Clearly, I'm like, okay, I'm not saying I'm the smartest person ever, but clearly I'm smarter than like some people. I was in the tier at school that was for the, how do I put it nicely? Whatever, the worst tier of the school, okay? The people that are like gonna amount to, well, no, they didn't all amount to, oh, did they actually? I'm trying to think if there was anyone successful from that tier. Maybe there wasn't. I'm probably the most successful person actually that was in that low tier of school. Yeah, I didn't start. I started out in the middle classes and just got demoted. And the only class that I liked was English because I can only focus on what I'm into. If I don't care about something or the teaching's not right, you're never going to convince me and like connect with me on it. So I only liked English. That was the only subject that I didn't get demoted to. But the fucking teacher, Mr. Rimmer, that's literally his name was Mr. Rimmer. And he's the worst person I've ever met in my life. The worst teacher, no creativity. It was just awful. So I couldn't, you know, thrive and like do better in English. But I feel like the education system was totally stacked against me. But I think back and I'm like, oh my God, maybe I was ADHD. This would explain why I just like talked in class and didn't pay attention. And it would explain like even the problems that I have with my podcast, which I'm open to you guys about, and how I have trouble staying on track with things and being satisfied with it. And you guys know all of my freakouts from like moving back home and not being able to deal with like spaces. I mean, I'm even freaking out about going to this wedding because I'm going to be like trapped in a space I don't want to be in. Okay. I read all of this shit and I think, oh my God, this ADHD autism just fits me like a glove. But here's the thing. So many of us can fucking identify with these traits. So many of us could tick this like list. We could go on TikTok and watch these, you know, pretty blonde 25-year-old women going, 15 signs you have ADHD, and probably identify with like 14 of the 15, right? And then we could use it to justify everything that's ever gone wrong in our lives. And for many of us, it's like, what is getting diagnosed really going to do, okay? So if you have ADHD and it's so bad that it's harmed your ability to like do daily tasks and to like hold down a job and things of that nature, of course, get diagnosed, get medicated, get treated, do the whole thing. For me personally, even though I can identify with a lot of what, you know, M and other people say, like, I don't feel like I've personally done enough to remedy my bad habits, of which I have many. And as hard as it is, I do think, like, if I put my mind to it and was disciplined, I could fix so many issues around my disorganization and procrastination. And there's just like not enough personal responsibility for fucking anything anymore. That's why like the Jordan Petersons of the world are good. And I'm not a fan of Jordan Peterson any longer. I do think he's a quack. I think he is way too deep in culture wars. I think he has a God complex. He's just a bit cuckoo now. But I will say that when I discovered his whole like clean your room and get your shit together philosophy in my late 20s, when he like first came on the scene, he helped me a lot. Like, he definitely improved my life a lot for like quite, I mean, I feel like I should go back and like read his book again and like read his early lectures before he turned into a kook. And I do really feel like, you know, being disciplined and cleaning your room and all of the like, you know, pull your fucking bootstraps up, work on good habits and be focused and stuff, I feel like that can completely change your life. And for some people naturally are good at that. Like, people have type A personalities and are just so regimented. And then other people, like, you know, creatives and more scattered, disorganized people like myself, really have to fucking work hard on that shit and, you know, read the self-help books of, you know, 15 habits to being successful and then like literally do all the advice. And, you know, it's very, very hard. But I feel like there's so many things that, you know, I could do before I would even consider trying to get a quick fix with a diagnosis and some pills. And a lot of you have contacted me about either having ADHD yourself or having, you know, children with autism and stuff. A lot of you are outraged about just as Zach Peter was, about feeling like celebrities are coming on and hijacking the issue and sort of like making light of it because they're clearly very high functioning, successful, killing it at life. And then suddenly, you know, they're this victim with, you know, autism or whatever, when, you know, your mums out there are dealing with like the struggles of raising an autistic child. And many women contacted me with ADHD, and a lot of you got diagnosed before this was like a whole trend. So you've all been diagnosed for a really long time. Some of you have been on medication for it for years, and it's fixed your lives a lot and helped you a lot. I've had other people that got on the medication, then worked really hard to get off of it. And remedy some of, you know, their behavior. I have a good friend that actually was diagnosed OCD, and he had a drinking problem. He got sober in AA and then weaned himself off of his OCD meds. And like, of course, he still has OCD traits. He's OCD, but he's worked towards managing it. And that doesn't apply to everybody. Some of you absolutely need to have those meds to treat whatever issues you have and probably need to be on them for the rest of your life. No shame there. But like, it's interesting hearing stories of normal people who were diagnosed before it was a trend, who like actually kind of worked hard to get off of the meds or to like overcome the ADHD, whatever the issue is that they have. And then you have like an M. Rosciano who is so desperate to get diagnosed that she doctor shops, then turns it into a brand, then victimizes herself, takes space away from people that, you know, suffering and struggling much more than she is, and seems to have no goal of like fixing some of her behavior or anything. It's just sort of like wallowing in the symptoms. And I'm like, oh my God, I stim all the time and I've been masking for a long time. And this song is my hyperfixation song. Like, so excited to use all of the freaking autistic lingo. It feels very just like typical narcissistic behavior. And I left something big out, okay? Surprise, surprise, M is currently working on a live stage tour about being neurodivergent and having, you know, autism, and a podcast series about it as well. And I assume that the podcast series, since she already has a Spotify deal, it's probably a deal for a good amount of money with either with Spotify or someone like that, and it's going to get her a lot of clout and attention. So there you go. There's the end goal with that. And let me give you my hottest take while we're wrapping this up, my hottest take of all on this. My opinion, again, I'm not a medical doctor. If M. Rosciano somehow stumbled upon this podcast, leave now, because this is going to upset you. And this is something that you would usually say behind somebody's back, which I am. I just don't want anyone. I don't want M to hear this because I just know it's going to trigger her. And I'm not as mean as I seem, but I find it so fucking insane how M has made the autism all about herself when she literally has like I think he's 4 years old now. He just turned four. She has a child who's been diagnosed level 2 autism, which is more severe than M's. Like, M said she's level 1, and she's level 1 running one of the most successful podcasts in Australia and like touring the country and stuff. Her son is a level 2 autism that requires a lot more support. And then to see M like on her podcast waving a fucking assessment around like she's a Viva Drescher and saying she needs the sensory room at Marvel Stadium, and now I'm doing a tour and a podcast about autism. It feels like she's like one-upping her own kids. Like, it's like fucking Mummy Dearest type like competition stuff. Hardcore narcissism. I need to be the most disabled person in the family. I have ADHD and autism and all of these other issues. And it's like, I would respect it so much more if she just went full Jenny McCarthy and campaigned on behalf of her kid. Like, I'm campaigning on behalf of my son, but it's all about her. And the diagnosis she's probably missing is narcissistic personality disorder, which, by the way, I believe that Abby Chatfield absolutely has, but that's a story for another day. Anyway, I'm not a doctor. My opinion, this has been a long podcast, way longer than I expected. I hope you're still here because, oh my God, almost an hour on autism. Okay, guys, thank you for listening. I'll be back in a week or so. Get extra content on Patreon, patreon.com/unpopularjp. That's where a lot of my like Bravo recaps and things of that nature are. Follow me on social media at unpopularjp. Leave me a 5-star review. Actually, you know what? Definitely leave me a 5-star review this week on Spotify and Apple, because Yeah, if the autistic women of Australia find this, I'm going to get review bombed out the fucking ass. Because actually, M's followers already did review bomb me once before on Spotify. They completely destroyed my Spotify rating. And it actually wasn't even about my podcast. It was because I tweeted, and it actually wasn't. I swear to God, it was not about M specifically. It was about influencers in general getting on the ADHD bandwagon, but I tweeted this around the time when M did her National Press Club event, so of course M put it in my mind, but I said, you don't have ADHD, you're just stupid. And M Rosciano found the tweet and she posted it, and then her fans found me and they found my podcast and they just destroyed me on Spotify. So please leave me a good review and I'll see you all in a week or two. Bye guys.